is Torah. And the problem is, what exactly, what I'd like to try to understand is the relationship between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu. We all know that that Korach took a stand against Aaron, HaKohen, and took a stand against appointments that Moshe Rabbeinu made. But it also seems that Korach took a particular stand against Moshe Rabbeinu. And that's a little hard for us to understand. I mean, after all, Moshe Rabbeinu recently brought the Torah into the world. And having brought the Torah into the world, I mean, you'd think that he would be off-putting. It wouldn't be so easy to take a stand against Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, you'd have to have Korach, would have to have some way of justifying to himself that he could take a stand against Moshe Rabbeinu. And even though it says in the Pasuk, that Ha'eda Kulam Kedoshim, that was the Ta'ana, that somehow they all were at Har Sinai and they all received the Torah, yet it must be obvious to everybody that Moshe Rabbeinu was special. He was different. He wasn't like anybody else. So what we're looking for is the specific relationship between Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu. So the first source on the sheet, which we will look at, is about the appointing of a king in Israel. We know that the first king in Israel, his name was Shaul, right? And he was of the tribe of Binyamin. He was the tribe of Binyamin, and he was appointed king by a Navi. That Navi's name was Shmuel. Now, it's hard for us to understand. It would be hard at first to understand how this could happen. Because after all, Yaakov Avinu, when he blessed Yehuda, he seemed to indicate that, without going into that, but we seem to indicate that the kingship would pass on to the tribe of Yehuda. And therefore it's hard to understand exactly why Shmuel HaNavi was asked by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to appoint Shaul king. After all, Shaul was not of the tribe of Yehuda. At the end, it sort of worked out, because Shaul's behavior was unacceptable, and he was killed, and his son was killed, right, Yonatan? His son was killed, and the Malchut passed over to Yehuda, to David HaMelech, which sort of straightened it all out, because David HaMelech, of course, was from the tribe of Yehuda, right? And so that was okay again. But the question about Shaul HaMelech remains. Now, it's also true, the second story about Shmuel and Shaul was that Shmuel didn't want to do it. He didn't want to appoint a king in Israel. He thought that whatever the political situation was before Shaul HaMelech, right, the world of Shoftim. Right, you remember Shoftim, the second book of the Tanakh? First is Yoshua, the second is Shoftim, which these are things that we learn when our children go to school. You know, like nobody ever knows them. But then all of a sudden your children show up and they say, help me with this, you know, like what's going on? So the period of the Shoftim was distinguished by what was called, or what is called by Max Weber, charismatic leadership. Charismatic leadership means that when you had a problem, the leader was born. But there was no king in Israel, but when there was a war or an imminent battle, somehow a leader just came to be, you know, somebody grew up. In fact, that was the way, I suppose, that Shaul became the king of Israel. But before Shaul became the king of Ebin, in other words, he was a charismatic personality. As it says in the Pasuk, that he was tall and strong, you know, and a shepherd, which was in those days a serious occupation. So he was a charismatic leader, but the Shoftim were people who emerged. They emerged when the need came up, and they became temporarily kings of Israel. And so they went to battle. They went to battle as kings of Israel, right? But they didn't remain kings. When the battle was over, they kind of faded away into oblivion. And so that's what we call charismatic leadership. That people, unlike regular kings, who are often totally incompetent, but they are the sons or daughters of kings, these people, these shoftim, were not the children of kings, but they were, everybody looked up to them and said, they're going to solve the problem, they're going to save us, these charismatic leaders. So again, there was no kings in Israel during the period of the Shoftim, right? And there were no kings in Israel during the period of the Shoftim, and there were charismatic leaders, which we call Shoftim, who were sort of kings for the moment, kings for the problem that came up. They had to go to war against Midian, so they went, led by whoever it was, right? Whoever was the leader. After the war was over, if it was successful, the leader would disappear. There's even a story about Yiftach, that he was offered kingship. He was offered kingship and refused it. Because, in any event, kingship in Israel started from the bottom. The people came to Shmuel and they said to him, it's not good enough, this charismatic leadership business. We want to have a real king. A real king, as the Torah describes a real king, whose children will be kings after him, and his their children after them. And without getting into it, we could understand that there are certain political advantages to having a king, to having a country, to having a banner, to having an army, to having, you know, all of these things are true. And the main thing that the king did, which affected every person in the country, was to collect taxes. Because to have a king and to have I don't know, an army, of course somebody has to pay for it. Right? Somebody has to pay for it. So our beloved leader in America said, in his inimitable ways, that having an army in South Korea costs a lot of money, which is not perfectly clear, and it sounded like he was telling us something that we could not have possibly known on our own. And so we're happy that he did that. So what a king did, the main thing that a king did was collect taxes. And the main thing that the taxes were collected for was the army. You have a standing army. It's not like a charismatic leader. A charismatic leader says, who's with me? You know, and then they all show up on horseback with sandwiches that their wives gave them when they left. No, it's not like that. It's like today. You want to have an army? Every day they show up and want to eat lunch. And in order for them to eat lunch, you have to have money. Now, when Shlomo HaMelech collected the tax money in order to build the Beit HaMikdash, which sounds like a great thing to do. Now, what else would you do with money except build the Beit HaMikdash? However, when Shlomo HaMelech died, the people came to his son. His son's name was Rechavam. Rechavam, yafeh. Rechavam, that was his son's name. And they said, we can't afford to pay so much tax. Sounds familiar in history. That's what they said. And he said to them, you think you paid a lot up to now? You're going to pay more under me. Right? I want even more money. And the way it's told in the Tanakh, that was the reason for the split between the northern kingdom, what became the northern kingdom, and the southern kingdom. And the southern kingdom, Yehuda, remained under the leadership of the family of David HaMelech. David HaMelech, Shlomo HaMelech, Rechavam. Right, he became the king. But the northern kingdom split away, and they had a new king. Yerubam ben Nevat, who turned out to be the worst possible person imaginable. But he, Yerubam ben Nevat was a real king. By that I mean, he was anointed by a prophet. He, Yerubam ben Nevat, was anointed by a prophet, just as Shaul was anointed by a prophet, anointed by Shmuel HaNavi, and David was anointed by a prophet, also Shmuel HaNavi. Right, so that's about kingship. Who's the Navi who anointed Yerubam ben Nevat? Achiyah HaShiloni. He was the prophet who anointed. So you understand that there is this institution called king, and there was a long period of time when there were no kings, but there were charismatic leaders. But I say there was no king because the children, there was no inheritance of kingship. And there was no permanence of kingship either. The kings were kings only as needed. And that's what we call charismatic leadership. But they were appointed and anointed by prophets. Who appointed and anointed? Shaul and David. That was Shmuel HaNavi. Now, after the king is anointed, his son doesn't have to be anointed anymore. That's the halakha. If, as long as you go from father to son, right, then the old anointment somehow works for the new king as well.
Maybe I'm jumping the gun, but are you going to...
Maybe
I'm jumping the gun, but is this sort of like a parallel?
What does that mean, to jump a gun?
In other words, that I might be throwing something out a little bit too quickly. Hopefully I'm not. But is this the argument that Korach is making, that he considers Moshe to be a charismatic leader who arose during the time but is no longer needed because everybody is kadosh? But Hashem, on behalf of Moshe, makes the argument, no, he is my anointed prophet, and therefore much like an anointed king.
Maybe. But I think it's a little bit different. But let's see how it works out. First we'll see the psukim in Shmuel Aleph about the disagreement between Shmuel and the people. So the pasuk says, "Vayom Shmuel kol Yisrael." So this is Shmuel said he was opposed to having a king, right? Which remains a problem. I mean, the pasuk of the Torah in Dvarim says Som Tasim Alecha Melech, which the Rambam says is actually a mitzvah. Right? There's a mitzvah to have a king. So it's hard to understand how Shmuel could have been opposed to kingship in Israel. But he was. And he said so. Not only did he say it at that time, but here in this pasuk he says, Hine shamati b'kolchem, l'kol asher amartem, v'al m'lich aleichem melech, I appointed a king as you requested. But you know that I was not for it. V'ata, hine ha-melech, Mitalech lifnechem. Here the king is going before you. The king is Shaul. Vani zakanti, v'safti, u'banai inam itchem. He says, I'm old and tired. My sons are with you. Vani italachti lifnechem minuraya the yom. I said, I walked before you from the time I was with. It's hard to know exactly what he wants, Shmuel. He says, I was with you from the time I was young until today. Hineni anu vi neged Hashem and neged Mishicho. Et shor mi lakachti v'chabor mi lakachti. Ved mi ashakti ved mi ratzoti v'yad mi lakachti kofer v'ali meinai. V'ashiva always starts, you know, saying atonement. He starts saying, I didn't take anything, I didn't do anything, I didn't use anything. Rashi says, show me lakachti, whose ox did I take? Lavodati, for my own private use. V'chamor mi lakachti, k'shayiti olech mi'ir li'ir, when I went from one city to the other, lishmototam, to judge them, al iskei tzorcheihem, hayiti olech, al hachamor sheli, I would go on my own donkey, v'hayali li tol b'shelahem. It's like, you know, like, he's saying I wasn't even a member of the board of directors. I drove my own car, like a guy in the Knesset. I remember these years ago, there was a Chaver Knesset who took the bus.
Benny
Begin. He's the writer about it. What?
Benny Begin,
still does. Benny Begin, before Benny Begin. Before Benny Begin. Somebody named Katz. Katz, who was a religious Chaver Knesset from Haifa. And he used to come to the Knesset from Haifa by bus. You know, people couldn't, they couldn't believe it. And he said, well, you know, that's what whatever he said. But it didn't catch on. It doesn't matter. But Benny Begin lived right here, right? He lived in Beit HaKerem or something. He was very close. Okay, so in other words, so what is it exactly that Shmuel is saying? Why does he sort of make this confession? Pasuk Dalit. V'yomru lo ashaktanu v'lo ratzatanu v'lo lakachtam yad ish me'uma. So they all, you know, now hearing that he's retiring and he's leaving the scene and he's not going to have any position, so everybody says, oh, you're a great guy and we know that you didn't take anything v'yomer aleihem, and he said to them, Eid Hashem v'chem v'eid mishicho hayom hazeh ki lo matzatem v'yadim u'uma v'yomer eid. So perhaps he has some kind of clearing the decks, you know, before he retires, before he leaves, before he becomes the subject of gossip in the gossip columns of the world. He says, forgive me and tell me I'm all right and tell me everything is fine and that you have no complaints about me. So then you come to the next section. V'yom Shmuel el ha'am Hashem asar asal Moshe v'et Aharon asher elah et avotecha v'eretz Mitzrayim v'ata et yatzvu v'ishavta etchem lefnei Hashem et kol tzidkot Hashem asher asah etchem v'et avotechem. So here you have this kind of a secondary statement by Shmuel. Okay, I'm leaving, but I want to make sure you understand that God took you out of Mitzrayim and brought you here the way it is. And then he goes through the, you know, the past. He goes through the past. And then if you look at he goes through that. Let's go to the second source. You see, Bamidbar Perek Tet Zayin. Bamidbar Perek Tet Zayin. One second. In any event, but Midrash Perek Tet Zayin is our parasha. It's our parasha, the parasha of Korach. Vayishlach Moshe likol leDatan veAviram bnei Eliyav. Now Datan veAviram, they were the representing the large group that came with Korach to deny authority. Moshe Rabbeinu's authority and Aaron's authority's appointment, they all came, but we understand, we don't understand exactly what they were going to benefit. What was the profit? Okay, so every time you support a corrupt person, you hope that some of his corruption will wear off on you as well, right? You support corruption because you think it's profitable for you. Like, you know, why not share? Why shouldn't the corruption be shared? So this is what the pasuk says. Hamaat vayomer lo na'aleh vayishlach Moshe likro l'Datan ve'Aviram vayomer lo na'aleh. And they say lo na'aleh. We don't want, I mean, the way the Chazal understood that is they sort of said, we don't want to go to you, which implies a higher spiritual level. We just don't want to go with you. We don't want to respond to you. Hama'at, they go on to say, ki helitanu meretz avat chalav udvash, v'amiteinu b'midbar. He says, isn't it enough that you took us out of Eretz Avat Chalav Udvash, which of course is a pun, right? Because Eretz Canaan is Eretz Avat Chalav Udvash, and Mitzrayim is not. Mitzrayim is different. But the pun is that you took us, right? You led us, the Eretz Avat Chalav Udvash, l'hamiteinu b'midbar. And after all, you caused us to die here in the desert. That's what happened in the parish of Shalach, right? The parish of the Meraglim. Ki histerer aleinu gam histerer. Now, what does that mean? Histerer aleinu, right? Histerer aleinu. Histerer is the word lisror, to have authority. You have authority over us. And therefore, we blame you for the mess that we're in. Pasuk Yudalit, Aflo el Eretz Avat Chalav Udvash Aviyotanu. You took us from an Eretz Avat Chalav Udvash, but you didn't bring us to a land of Zavat Chalav Udvash. Ratitin lanu nachlat sadeh v'kerem, and you didn't give us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Aineh aneshim ha'im tilakeh. The eyes of those people who see what's really going on. I mean, you're gonna put out their eyes. You're gonna make them blind. They won't be able to see. Lo na'ale. We're not gonna go with you. Now, pasuk tedvav. See pasuk tedvav. Vayichal leMoshe meod. Moshe Rabbeinu got very angry. Vayomer LaHashem, and he turns to God. And says, Al Tefen El Minchatam, don't pay any attention to their gift. A mincha is a meal offering. It means like a korban that is made out of meal. Right? Al Tefen El Minchatam, Lo Chamor Echad Mehem Nasati, Velo Zhariyoti Et Echad Mehem. I didn't take a donkey from them. Imagine Moshe Rabbeinu, which donkey is he saying that he didn't take from them? What is he talking about? Rashi at the bottom, Lo chamor echad mehem nasati, Lo chamoro shel echad mehem natalti. I didn't take anybody's chamor. I didn't borrow it. I paid myself. I rented the car myself. I didn't take somebody else's car. I didn't take a company car. I didn't take a rental car. I got it all myself. Afilu kishalachti mi Midyan leMitzrayim. Rashi adds, even when I went from Midyan, remember, Moshe Rabbeinu ran away from Mitzrayim to Midyan. We met his wife and his father-in-law, and that story. He says, Afilu kishalachti mi Midyan leMitzrayim. When I went back, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu told me to go back to Mitzrayim, v'herkavti et ishti v'et banai ala chamor. And I kind of gave them a ride, my wife, my children. It was Yitro, but that doesn't matter. I should have taken the chamor from them, from the people who I was with. He says, Lo natalti ela misheli. I insisted that they would come on my chamor, with targum ungulus, etc. Okay, it doesn't matter. Now, if you look again, look back at the pasuk in Shmuel Aleph. The pasuk says, pasuk gimel, Hineni anu bi, neged Hashem v'neged mishicho, etshor mi lakachti, v'chamor mi lakachti. Right, pasuk gimel, etshor mi lakachti, it's exactly like Moshe Rabbeinu. Exactly like Moshe Rabbeinu. So So it literally, people might call this literary style. You know, like whoever wrote Shmuel, whoever wrote that down, the Psukim of Shmuel, who was that? The Gemara says it was Shmuel. What? It was Shmuel who wrote Shmuel. So he says, why did Shmuel say about himself? Why did he say about a chamor milakachti? Because he remembered that's what Moshe Rabbeinu said. And he felt the same. But really, the question is not where the phrase comes from. The question is, why did Shmuel feel that the application of that phrase to he himself was appropriate? I mean, after all, if Moshe Rabbeinu said something, that's not necessarily a reason to copy it. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu, he's special. I'm not going to say exactly what Moshe Rabbeinu said. So that's what he says, Chamor mi lakachti, ved mi ashakti, ved mi ratzoti, u miyad mi lakachti kofer. The Pasuk Amini, the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, v'alim einai bo, v'ashiv lachem. He says, that's what he said. Okay, Lashiv Lachem. In other words, there was some kind of a complaint about Shmuel. Just as there was some sort of complaint about Moshe Rabbeinu. But we don't know exactly what the complaint was. So there is an attempt by the Pre-Tzaddik, I guess, you know, getting into the Pre-Tzaddik habit with the Pre-Tzaddik. If you look at the second page, look at the second page. I'll try to explain what the Pre-Tzaddik says. Haftarat parashat zo. This is how he places the question that we just asked. So he says it in a different way. He says the haftarah of the parasha of Korach, parashat zo, b'Shmuel Aleph Yudbeis. So these psukim that we just learned, right? The haftarah for the parasha is in Shmuel Aleph. Perek Yud Beis, Hamidaber Ikar Mimamloch Chet Shaul, VaHashayechet LeParashat Zo, Masha Amar Shmuel Et Shor Milakachti VeGomer, DeDomel LeLishon Moshe Rabbeinu VeParashat Zo, Lo Chamor Echad Me'em Nasati VeGomer. He says, you could usually look for a reason that the Haftarah was chosen for this particular parasha. Right? So he says, and the reason is that Pasuk that we saw, which seems to be exactly similar, the Pasuk about Shmuel HaNavi and the Pasuk about Moshe Rabbeinu. However, he says, Hurak Ktzat Shivui. He says, it's not really much of a connection. This is not a good enough reason. Not a good enough reason for making this the Haftarah for that parasha, for the parasha of Korah. V'chein mashe nidrash b'midrash rabah. Furthermore, psukei Shmuel u'psukei Moshe gam kein hu shayachut klusha. So we didn't learn that yet, but we'll see that the Midrash Rabbah, the other source that's on the sheet, is from the Midrash Rabbah. There is an ongoing kind of commentary which compares what happened with Shmuel with what happened with Moshe Rabbeinu. But he, the Pre-Tzaddik, says, Gam kein hu shayachut klusha. I don't know exactly why he says that. Shayachut klusha means it's a weak comparison. Shayachut is to be connected, and klusha is weak. Right, something weak. Ach, he says. But now he has to. He set it up. He set up the questions. He's got to give an answer. Ach, ha'inyan shekol ha'parasha hu me'inyan shechidei Shmuel hamlucha l'Shaul. But the entire parasha in Shmuel is about chidei Shmuel hamlucha. That Shmuel, after all. He created kingship in Israel. I mean, of course, he was commanded by God to do it, but he did it. He's the one who established Shaul as the king, that the king of Israel. He says, "Meinachid emluchali Shaul, u mikol makom amar lahem musar." And then he went on to tell them Musar, because when do you tell people Musar? When they are creating a dangerous situation for themselves. So we know that Malchut, that kingship, creates danger. Most of the kings of Israel and Yehuda were bad people who encouraged the Jews to violate the Torah and to be involved with Avodah Zarah. That's that we know. He says, Amar le Musar v'amar, and so Shmuel said, De'u ra'u ki ra'atchem rabah. I want you to remember that there's a lot of wickedness in you. Asher asitem b'nei Hashem lish'ol atchem melech. He says it was a bad thing that you did to ask for a king. So I say again, you know that Shmuel, for some reason, which is not perfectly clear, but it is true that Shmuel tries to explain himself and says that, again, as we said before, that kingship is difficult. It's primarily difficult because it costs money. And if it costs money, that means everybody has to pay. Right? That's the difficulty that Shmuel was referring to. The same thing is true about Korach, shenechlak lorak al kohunat Aharon bilvad, who denied the kohuna, the priesthood of Aharon bilvad, ki imgam al meluchat Moshe. Here it is. Gam, I just said it. Gam al meluchat Moshe means, what does that mean? That he was denying the kingship of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, what is the kingship of Moshe Rabbeinu? Look carefully. The mikodem hayu hashoftim gam kein melachim. Says before Shmuel appointed Shaul as the king of Israel, there were kings in Israel. Was what I tried to explain before about charismatic leadership. There were kings in Israel, ayu ashoftim gam kein melachim. What does that mean? The shoftim were melachim. Well, they would lead the people in war. They would be the generals of the Jewish people, and that's what a king is. A king is somebody who goes to war when necessary. Ki im gam al meluchat Moshe. Right, that these shoftim who led the Jews into battle, they may not have physically led them into battle, because they had another job, and that other job was to judge the people. Right, shoftim from the word shofet. They were also judges. They were judges and they were kings. The milchama, Ushmuel azaram bekoach hatfilah, and Shmuel was able to help them, meaning the shoftim, by davening. He had it. He was able to daven. He was able to supplicate heaven for the benefit of the people. Vayedeze yatzu lemilchama benitzchu. So they were able to go out to war and to be victorious. So the Pritzadik says that they had kings before the king. There was a king before the king. If you'll say that the main job that the king had was to lead the people into battle, well, they had somebody to do that. That not only did they have somebody to do that, but they also had Shmuel Hanavi. And what was his contribution? He davened. And davening was important, and it was able to guarantee victory. Zeshen Amar, these psukim in Halok Tzir Chitim Hayom, Ekra Lashem Begomer, that he says about himself, I can daven. I can daven to Hashem. Hainu Shaya Yechol Lif'ol Hakol B'Tfilato. That's what Shmuel said. What do you need a king for? Why do you want to have a king? We have that already. We have the setup that gives me the same result. And it may be that according to the Kri Tzaddik, this is really the demand of the Torah. When the Torah says Sof Tasib Alecha Melech, it means recognize the fact that God will give you charismatic leaders who would lead you to battle, and then the Navi will support that. And so you'll have the result that you want without the burden of kingship, right, of government. That's a difficult thing. V'chein Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, that's about Shmuel. So what about Moshe Rabbeinu? Hayagam kei melech. Moshe Rabbeinu was a king. Showed Siyam mi Mitzrayim. He took them out of Mitzrayim and he moved them, you know, horizontally from one place to another. That's that kind of leadership. Upir Nisam. He gave them what they needed, right? Man and Miriam's well. The Kilkilam. And he took care of their economic needs. Bamidbar, Biman, Ube'er. Right, that's Moshe Rabbeinu. He supplied that for them, just like a king is supposed to do. Ach lo kemelech hayotzei b'milchama. But he was not the kind of king who goes out and leads the people in battle. Rak bechinat melech b'koach haTorah. But he was the king, and he derived his authority from the Torah, just like Shmuel derived his authority from davening. Moshe Rabbeinu derived his authority from the fact that he knew the Torah, that he was supporting whatever he did. He supported the Torah.
He received the Torah.
What?
He received the Torah.
Also, rak bechinat melech b'koach haTorah derabanan akrei melachim. That we know in the Gemara very often it says, you know, who are the real kings? Who are real kings? That those are the rabbanan. Kemoshe amru v'korach nechlak ubachar b'melech yeder kol agoyim. Korach said, no, we don't want that kind of king. We want a melech kol agoyim, a king like all the goyim, which is what the people said to Shmuel and Avi. It's in the pasuk of the Torah also. Asher yitzei lefnehem lemilchama. Okay. So what I think is happening, I think Jeff was maybe, you know, onto this. The way I understand it is that there are people who have multiple personalities. They function in different ways. So he says, hey, Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was the one who brought the Torah into the world, I mean physically. Physical Torah, and then who taught the Torah in the desert to the Jewish people. So he was like a unique personality. Besides that, there were certain features of his personality which were more regular. He was for a while a Kohen, right, until he passed the Kuna onto Aaron HaKohen. And for a while, until he died, actually, he was the king of Israel. And he was in charge of going to war and straightening out the camp, you know, how the camp should be organized. He was also the melech. So when you have a person like that, and then Shmuel HaNavi there were certain similarities. I mean, he was the Navi, which is a special connection to God, right? A Navi gives everybody else that special connection. It's not just a personal thing, or even if there is a personal kind of a Navi, Shmuel was not that. Shmuel was a national Navi. So he was a Navi, but he was also, according to the Kri Tzaddik, a Melech. Right? Of course, his Malchut, he acted his Malchut by appointing kings, and also by davening. Right, tefillah, that's what he was able to do. So you have multiple personalities. You could come to, apparently, you could make an error. You can make an error. You could say, Moshe Rabbeinu, when it comes to the Torah, he's a great man. When it comes to being a king, he's like a king. Like I can make a judgment. I can't make a judgment on Moshe Rabbeinu as the bringer of the Torah into the world. But maybe I can make a judgment on Moshe Rabbeinu acting as the king of Israel. And since I can make a judgment acting on the king of Israel, I go and I take a haircut and I ask the barber, what's a king like? Or what is a king supposed to do? And if the barber says something that's not really appropriate to Moshe Rabbeinu, so I say, oh, that was what Datan Aviram said. They said, you took us out of Mitzrayim. Right? You didn't bring us anyplace else. You didn't give us what we really needed. The way we ate and the way we drank was not normal and not regular. And therefore, we don't like the way you are the king of Israel. And it was possible. It was possible for people to make this error. This error. And this error was made twice in Jewish history. Twice in Jewish history. Once when Korach, in the riots of Korach against the leadership of Israel. And the second was when Shmuel, when the people wanted to appoint a king, and Shmuel tried to explain to them that this was not going to be a good idea, but would cost them dearly. And that cost them dearly part of it was something that they were willing to forget about. And so the original question of the Pritzadik about what's the connection between the parasha of Korach and the parasha that we read in the Haftorah in Shmuel, well, the difference is that the same mistake was being made. And that mistake was that if you have a person who is a superior person, he can sometimes, or he can generally, take on a job which doesn't seem to be at first appropriate to him and excel at it. And that was Moshe Rabbeinu, and that was Shmuel HaNavi. The last lines here in the Pritzadik, Rak Moshe Rabbeinu lo yada klau ma'ala ba'atzmo shehu yitron b'ma'ala al ma'ala alachar rak shebachar bo Hashem yitbarach ואומר, כיוון שנצרח אחד להיות שליח לקבלת התורה, בחר השם יתברך בו, ואילו בחר השם יתברך באחר, היה הוא כמוהו, וכל אחד מישראל ראוי לזה. So Moshe Rabbeinu, he didn't understand about himself, that the fact that he was chosen to be the one who brings the Torah into the world makes him substantially different than everybody else. But he thought that God could have chosen anybody. They call Echad B'Yisrael Ra'ui Lazeh. Uchemo Yaakov Avinu She'al Avotav Amar Elokim Asher Etalchu Avotai Lefanav Haynu Behishtadlutam, that all of my parents were Yaakov Avinu says that Yitzchak and Avraham were able to work things out on their own, while Atzmo Amar Elokim Aroe Oti Rak Mitzad Hashem Yitbarach, that it's God who leads me on my way. Vaya Moshe Rabbeinu Machziko Likorach Leshav Lo Enosh Ke'erki He said, "We will." This is what it says in the Midrash, that we will somehow be able to do this together. The Midrash Rabbah, the Rash Pasuk says, "Al Aron," etc. So you see that Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, it's a secondary question. If this is all true, that Moshe Rabbeinu and Shmuel are superior personalities who were even great leaders and kings, then how come Moshe Rabbeinu ran away? Why did he go to God to ask God to do something? Straighten this out. You know, why wasn't he confident? So we know that there's the... I would add that the Sefer Ikarim, Rabbi Yosef Albo, Rav Yosef Alba wrote a book called the Sefer Yikarim, which is Jewish theology. Like, you know, what the Jews have to know. So in there he also does a lot of parshanut, and he said at the Chayta, when Moshe Rabbeinu and Aaron sinned with the hit the rock instead of talking to the rock. Remember that story?
Yeah.
So it's like not so easy to understand exactly where the chayta is. All the Rishonim ask on Rashi. Rashi says they hit the rock instead of speaking to the rock. There's some kind of, what do you expect? You know, people are going to be upset by that. They're going to think that this is a Chilul Hashem. Why is it Chilul Hashem? I mean, after all, generally speaking, when you hit a rock, it doesn't gush forth water. So what's the difference? This is a miracle, and that's a miracle. So Rabbi Yosef Alba says that wasn't the chait of Moshe Rabbeinu. The chait of Moshe Rabbeinu was that they ran to the tent of the Ohel Moed. When the people came, they said, "Give us water." They ran away and said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "What should we do?" But you know, they did not exhibit leadership. What was affected the malchut in them, the kingship in them? Because the kingship in them, we said that there is, the kingship was made up of charismatic leadership. Charismatic leadership meant you need it, you got it. Right? And so at that moment, B'nai Yisrael needed leadership. They came and they said, "We don't have any water. We want water." So they needed somebody to tell them, "You'll get what you need when the time comes. You'll get what you need when HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give it to you." Instead, Moshe Rabbeinu ran away and exhibited weakness instead of exhibiting kingship. The Rabbi Yosef Alba doesn't say that part about kingship. That I'm adding in light of what we learned today. And Rabbi Yosef Alba proves that his general idea that you can't run away from your obligation to authority by quoting the story of Yoshua in the Emek HaAleh. And Yoshua said, "Shemesh beGibon Dom, v'yareach beEmek Ayalon." Remember that?
Yep.
Shemesh beGibon Dom. Gibon was where they were. Shemesh beGibon, the sun in Gibon Dom. It should just stop. Just be quiet. V'yareach beEmek Ayalon, and the earth, so that time should stop. Why did Yoshua say that time should stop? Because he knew that if he had a little more time, he would be able to be victorious in the battle. The battle against the Ai. That's what Yoshua knew. So Yoshua was the king. Yoshua was the king of Israel. And he exhibited this powerful position. He said, "Shemesh v'gibon dom v'yareach beEmek Ayalon." Rav Yosef Alba says, how did Yeshua know that it would happen? How did he know that if he said Shemesh v'Givon Dom, it would happen? That the sun would stop and the moon would stop and the day would continue until they won the battle? I mean, who told him that? And so Rabbi Yosef Alba says, you see, Yeshua did not run to the Kotel. He did not run to wherever you run to complain to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he doesn't know what's going to happen. But leadership, malchut, meant that Yoshua had full confidence that whatever was necessary to win the battle would actually happen. And what was necessary was that time should stop. So even though it seems to us to be absolutely impossible, for Yoshua it was perfectly reasonable. And so Yoshua did not say, "What should I do to HaKadosh Baruch Hu?" He did not say, "Maybe we could think about this as an idea," or "What is it that we could do?" He said, "Lashon Sivui," right? Command. It's a command. To give a command to the heavenly bodies, you have to be pretty sure of yourself. That's what Malchut is. That's what Malchut is. You're pretty sure of yourself. So, the mistake that Korach made when it came to Moshe Rabbeinu was thinking that Moshe Rabbeinu was some kind of a split personality. That as the giver of the Torah, he was unique, unparalleled, without contest. He was Moshe Rabbeinu, but when it came to Malchut, he was maybe a regular person. Maybe he's a regular person, and it could be that if you read the story of Korach and Moshe Rabbeinu carefully, you'll see that Moshe Rabbeinu enters into a discussion with him, a sign of weakness, a sign that he doesn't know, or he doesn't know perfectly well what it is that is supposed to happen. So that's Rabbi Yosef Albo, who said that Malchut, charismatic kingship, or kingship of an appointed king, is something that happens absolutely confidently. Right? You know what it is. That's what a king is. The king is the one who knows what has to happen. And Moshe Rabbeinu gave in a little bit. And Korach was able to make the mistake that Korach made. And the same thing is probably true about Shmuel, since Kodesh Baruch Hu told Shmuel to give in. So that's a different story. Okay. Have a good Shabbos. Yeah.